Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for coming back. We took a long hiatus just so I could kind of get a grip on everything that was going on. Had a vacation in between there, our fifth anniversary, which I'll talk about in a couple minutes, maybe a little later on in the show. But I just wanted to kind of retool and reformat the show just a little bit, just to make it a little bit more cohesive for me and hopefully have it present to you in a little more of an organized format. So what I'll do is just kind of give you a little intro of how this is going to look. We're going to really start out with some news and entertainment. I mean, part of what's going on in the comic world is really important, especially now that all these crazy new movies are coming out and they're super awesome. And there are so many of them that, you know, it's hard to really just go out and see them all. I mean, unless you have oodles of spare time, and in this day and age, who does? It's really hard to go see everything. I mean, I haven't seen the new Ant-Man Wasp yet, and I've heard nothing but really good things. Still have not seen Solo either. Part of that may be because some of the reviews I'm hearing coming in, but regardless, there's just so much good stuff out there, and we haven't even talked about television. So what I'll do is I will touch a little bit on some news and entertainment. We're going to do some good books, as we always do, to review some books that you may want to pick up that are up and coming. What we're also going to add to this, too, is just a new book, too, that is already out on the shelves, though. So it will be a current book, but it won't be one that has yet to be released. It will be one that is already released and one that may be worth you checking out. So in this episode, just listen as we present our findings on Deadpool 2 and, you know, what I really thought about it. If it's the Empire Strikes Back, of what's sure to be a new Deadpool universe here, it's going to be kind of curious to see how they weave together, you know, with Fox Entertainment being sold to Disney, how they're going to weave Deadpool into this mess. I shouldn't call it mess. It's a really well-organized Disney universe that's created for Marvel. So it's really cool. Hear how it's easy to confront people on eBay. It's really easy to be, cyber muscles when you're behind a keyboard. Going to take a look at what's going on with CBCS and CGC. What are they, you ask? Well, they're grading services. You know, CGC, Comic Grading Company, has been around for a while, and CBCS is a new company that obviously saw a market here, easy secondary market to hop in and start grading books too. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Then we'll talk about Donny Cates. Is he really the hottest writer out there? I'll put in my two cents on that. And I'll put the finishing touches on our five-year anniversary. You know, being an Eagles fan, you can't hold on to that Super Bowl for too long. You have to move on at some point. It's the same with our five-year anniversary. I'll just do a final wrap-up for that. Obviously, a lot of thank yous to go out. It was a blast. But anyway, and last but not least, we will look at a creator that may be flying under your radar. And I'm going to tie this into the current book that's on the shelves, Black Badge. It's a really awesome book by Matt Kynt. So this may have flown under your radar, and we are at New Wave Comics and Collectibles doing an independent month for September. What does that mean? Well, our independent month means simply we are going to give you 25% off all independent titles. That does not include Image. My take on Image is they still double, you know, the market share of any other independent book out there other than Marvel and DC, so I really have a hard time calling them an independent book. I get it. The stories are independent-esque, absolutely, but they do pretty well, so they don't need our support. But people like, you know, Black Horse, Dark Horse, Black Mask, Boom, IDW, Zenoscope, these people can surely use some attention and are putting great stories out there, so we don't want to leave them in the lurch and want them to get some due attention. Valiant, almost forgot Valiant out there. They're going to start to put out some stuff into the cinematic universe. And finally, the podcast. You know, we thought we had a name, didn't have a name. Coy left, so we're coming up with a new name. So I'm just going to call it Comic Book Awesomeness, CBA for short. The reason for that is comic books are awesome. This whole medium is something that's just been in my life for, since I was this little kid running around in my underoos. And it's just awesome. Every Wednesday, I still get excited. To me, Wednesday is the best day of the week because it's New Comic Book Day. You know, I don't pull the order in on Tuesday. Turtle does. So when I come in on Wednesday, it's a new Wednesday for me too. I love just kind of perusing and checking out the shelf, seeing what's out, flipping through the books. Even though you see the previews, even though I read some of these books in the PDFs, it's just not the same when you actually get in front of all the books that came out for the week and they're all in front of you and just kind of perusing the titles. And, you know, depending on what state of mind you're in, it you know, you may pick up something you normally wouldn't. So, yeah. So, comic book awesomeness. All right. We're going to jump right into the entertainment part of it. I'm a little late to the game. Deadpool 2. I thought it was awesome. Absolutely, just a great, great movie. One of the knocks that I heard from people coming into the shop was that it's just more of the same. Well, yes, it is more of the same. I actually think that it was better than the first one. Maybe it's because I just saw it and it's, you know, resonating freshly in my mind. But the Juggernaut stuff was just flat out awesome. And some of the fourth wall stuff that Ryan Reynolds slash Deadpool have done was just awesome. You know, the whole, if you haven't seen it, you know, spoiler alert, but the whole cleaning up of the timelines when he goes and shoots the ill-fated Deadpool that had no mouth and fault Wolverine, just a horrible, horrible version of Deadpool when he goes and kills him and specifically says he's cleaning up the timelines to Hugh Jackman. I thought that stuff was hilarious. Getting torn in half by Juggernaut and then regrowing his legs. That scene was just hilarious. Hilarious stuff. So if you haven't seen Deadpool 2, which I'm sure you have, I'm the last one to the game, definitely go out and check out Deadpool 2. Not for the family, despite what Ryan Reynolds says in the movie. It is certainly not for the family. And I don't think it lagged anywhere. I can't think of any point where I'm like, okay, enough already. There was maybe one point at the end when he was dying, but that was the whole point of the joke, was for it to drag on and just you were waiting for it to be over. So even in the book, in the movie lagging, it was supposed to, and that was part of the comedy. By all means, a must watch. Other entertainment. Well, I guess this falls into entertainment. I want to talk a little bit about eBay. I don't know if anybody's familiar or even cares about my take on eBay, but sometimes they're a necessary evil, right? I mean, sometimes you need to flip a book. You want to get rid of it quickly while it's hot. Can't sell it to one of your friends. I can't sell it in the store. It's a necessary evil. Now, I would think that I would normally complain about eBay. Sure, they have fees and whatnot. But what I'm really starting to find is it's not eBay. It's not the people that run eBay or the website of eBay or whatever the heck eBay is. What it really is the people on the other end that I'm dealing with. I have met some of the rudest, most inconsiderate people ever. Well, I wouldn't say I've met them. That's the whole point. They're on the other end of the keyboard sending these errant messages of whatever crap comes to their mind. I'm a pretty decent, laid-back, easygoing dude, and if I make a mistake, I'll be the first to admit it, and I'll be the first to refund you, let you keep the book you got if it's not super expensive, and I make mistakes, and I definitely own up to it and try to make every attempt to make it a feasible outcome for the buyer. But some people, pardon my language, are just pure dickheads. I'm dealing with a guy now who couldn't be more of a self-righteous douche. It's really frustrating to not use more four-letter words with this individual. I've done everything out of my way to make this individual happy. And it's at the point now where as soon as this resolves, what I normally do is I'll write like a scathing response of what I really want to say. I'll let it sit. And then I'll go back and I'll write what's my wife would call the appropriate response. You know, making amends and, you know, thanking the person, whatnot, kill them with kindness type deal. And it's going to be really hard with this transaction. So hopefully if you do deal on eBay, don't be that guy or girl on the other end. Yeah, just do everything you can. I like to say, pretend you're standing in front of the person. And if you would talk that way in front of me, then you probably would never be welcome back at my store. Anyway, just thought I'd air that little grievance I have out there. So it's not really eBay. It's just some of the people who float around on eBay. I would love to meet some of these people and see what they're doing with themselves. Second PSA, I guess you could say, I want to put out there is Walmart. There's going to be a book, Dead Rabbit, later in here that actually has one of the characters who works at the Walmart. And I thought I wasn't going to bring this up. And I'm like, you know what? I'll make this a PSA for another day. But I want to throw this out there now. Walmart is making an attempt again to carry a line of comic books. As is with Walmart, they are in the business to make money. I mean, they certainly are, right? I mean, customer service, I wouldn't say, is at the forefront of their goals, nor is treating their employees well. And just, you know, watch The High Cost of Low Prices. This is a documentary, I believe it's still on Netflix. Talk to anybody who works at Walmart and kind of get your feel of how they treat their employees. So with that being said, as they make this foray into the comic world again, now they did this in the 90s. In the 90s, Walmart made an attempt to carry comic books in their stores. The idea was that, you know, comic books in the 90s were super hot and popular. So of course, Walmart wanted to capitalize on that. What Walmart is famous for doing, and again, if you shop at Walmart, I'm not looking to place any guilt on you or blame. I've gone there once in the past year, and I'll explain why that was. It's because what they do is successful, and what they do is they put small businesses out of business. My family and I, we go camping up at Rhode Island once a year for 2 weeks, and there was this local place up there called Benny's. And what Benny's was is, you know, it was, for lack of a better term, like a five and dime type place that had a little bit of everything. And one thing they always had was camping supplies. And so we would go up camping, and still do go up camping. Went up this past year, and every now and then we forget something. And so we go there to Benny's, but Benny's is closed, out of business. There is no Benny's. There's like three of them, I think, were in Rhode Island. It's just one or two that we would always go to support them and whatnot. And they were closed. And it was really, really upsetting. You know, they took down the Benny's sign, but you could still see the outline along the front of the building. So it was pretty depressing to see. So we were in a bind, right? We were camping, and there were a few things we needed for camping. Actually, it was just one. Excuse me. And yeah, we had no recourse. The only recourse was we had to find a Walmart. It was the only place that supposedly was going to carry this item we needed for our camp kitchen. And well, we went to Walmart, and it is as bleak as ever. It just really is. I mean, kind of knowing what Walmart's all about, I'm not going to pretend that I don't shop at some big box stores, right? I mean, Amazon is a whole other thing. I'm not going to get into that right now. But, you know, I use Amazon on occasion, and I still have some reservations about that. But Walmart is just something I've successfully cut out of my life except for this trip. And they didn't even have what we needed. Very little help from the people who work there. And I'm not going to fault them. I can't imagine. Well, I know what some of them get paid. But anyway, that's my little public service announcement. Now that Walmart is starting to carry comic books, if you shop there and you buy comics there, please understand what you're doing. It's not that you're just not spending the money at my store, which is perfectly fine. I would much rather you say, hey, I don't want to spend the money at Jason's store. Let me go to the Craven Comics. I think Chris Craven's awesome. Go support his store. Comic Archive in Lansdale, go support his store. Comic Zen, go support their store. Tales to Adventure up in Coopersburg, go support their store. Wade's Comic Madness in Lower Bucks County, go support their store. Cyborg Comics in Doylestown, go support their store. Yeah, these are all people. You know, you can see the owners working there. There's a reason the owners are working there. For one, they care about the people that come through the door. And for two, as someone once said at a comic show, and I'm sure people are sick of hearing this, owning a comic book store is a modest living. It really is. And so if you are going to support Walmart, which is perfectly at your preference. I just want you to understand what's going on. Because Walmart can drive people and has driven businesses out of business. So definitely please consider what you're doing. And if you have any questions, up for conversation about it, by all means, I work at the shop pretty often. So you can come see me and we can talk about that. Moving on to CBCS versus CGC. Okay, these two grading companies, yes, they're slow. I get it. We are a submission site for either of them. So if you want to submit your comics to get graded professionally by a third party, by all means, come see me and I can talk to you about how to do that. Now, the advantage of CBCS is that you can submit comics that have been signed by creators, but not witnessed by a representative. So if you were to send something that was autographed at a show, say you're going to the Comic Con down in Baltimore the end of the month, you could not submit that comic to CGC, or you could, if they didn't witness it, you would get the dreaded green label. Now, if for some reason you go and you luck out and you happen across a creator and you don't want to go to the CGC booth and pay them to have a representative come watch your book get signed, you can get the book signed, and we can submit it to CBCS. Now, this company, what they do is they have a verification program. So as long as you can tell me where the book was signed, who signed it, I can submit it to CBCS, and for a fee, I believe it's $15 a signature, and they do cap it at a certain point, but for a $15 fee, they'll verify it, and what they will do is give you a different color label that won't say that it's just a damaged book because it was signed by some person, they have no idea. They actually have a service where someone will actually verify that the book was signed by that creator. So yeah, there's your choices, CBCS or CGC. You know, another option is we just got these Ultra Pro One Touches in. Now, it's not a grading per se. What it is it's a really neat hard case that has some magnetic strips in them or holders. So you can put your book in. It's a really nice presentation. You can even hang them up. You're not professionally graded, but they're going to display and look just as nice as a CBCS or CGC graded book. They're just not going to be as professionally graded. They even have a nice mounting hook on the back that CBCS and CGC don't have. So you could certainly do that as another option to display and encapsulate and have your books presented to people. And finally, to wrap up our little intro here, our fifth anniversary. Wow. For one, I can't believe it's been 5 years. There's one or two good things about that. I mean, shit, 5 years has passed, which means I'm 5 years older. That's cool. But it's also awesome that we've been able to keep the doors open for 5 years. And I can't thank anyone other than you, the customer, the creator, Tom, Coy, the people that just supported us throughout the 5 years. And I'm not just talking about the Wednesday people that come to pick up their books or hold pull lists, but even the people who just pop in. I have some customers that pop in once a year. They come visit a family member for the holidays or family reunion, and they just pop into the store to say hi, and if they buy something, even better. But it's awesome. It's really awesome to be in business for 5 years and to start to recognize those habits of people coming. Even the passerby, the person who just happens to be, for whatever reason, is not really a thoroughfare for a major artery of a roadway, but people passing through skip back from one place to another and just stop in just to say hi, and they love comic books, and they always stop into any comic shop when they're out visiting. Just seeing those people is really awesome. So to have a 5-year anniversary party where I could see all the regulars that could make it in, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I can't begin to tell you how flattering it is. And we had the DJ there, and when he asked me to speak, he said, you know, you probably just want to say a few words to the crowd that was there, and it was like a ridiculous crowd. I do apologize for the wait time to ring people out. I mean, we probably had at least 20, 25 people in line. So he said, why don't you come over and say a few words? And it really took me a good 10 minutes to compose myself, not just to think of what to say, but just to not break down. I mean, it was really flattering. I mean, sure, I didn't win an Oscar, but it felt like it. I mean, it felt like I won something. And I guess what I really won was, you know, just having the best customers, you know, and I don't even consider you customers, consider everybody friends that come through the shop. Yeah, thank you again. So just to put a wrap on that, thank you again for 5 years, and I look forward to the next five or more. Who knows what's going to happen, right? All right, going on to some comic news, to the more exciting stuff. So if you've been waiting and skipped ahead, this is the part where you want to stop so you can actually hear about comics. Thanos Legacy. I just want to kind of bring up this book. Yes, it's been released for a couple weeks. It was a one-shot by Jerry Duggan from Marvel. And what they did, it's actually a one-shot by Jerry Duggan and Donnie Cates. Now, what's really cool about this book is, if for those of you that read Thanos Wins, which was Donnie Cates and Jeff Shaw's run on Thanos going to visit him, his future self, which was an awesome, awesome story. I think we still have some trades. This is how good this story was. Normally, when you get the trade, Diamond never sells out of trade paperbacks. They usually have a dearth of trade paperbacks. Or not? Well, I'm sorry, I used the word wrongly. They have had a dearth with this book because it was so popular it actually sold out. I mean, that's just unheard of. I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to say from not being a retailer, but a good example is, say, Red Hood and the Outlaws trade number 5 is coming out this week. I should be able to reorder that for you for the next year. And the only reason I couldn't order it for you after that is if it was unpopular and just went out of print. They're available. But with Thanos Wins, the trade was so heavily ordered. I like ordered triple numbers of it, which other stores must have too. It was sold out from the distributor for a while. But we do have some in stock. But what was really cool is this Infinity Wars that's going on now, which, okay, here's going to be a huge spoiler. Thanos gets his head cut off by Gamora. And so you're thinking, okay, well, I know how this death thing works in Marvel. Nobody stays dead. But what's really cool about this is Jerry Duggan, who is writing Infinity Wars, and Donnie Cates, who wrote Thanos Wins, got together to do this book. And there is such a cool twist in Thanos Legacy. You have to read it. I'm not going to spoil it, but it really ties the gap between Thanos Wins and Infinity Wars. So definitely pick that up if you want to check out something really cool. And what was also really cool at the end of Thanos Wins, it was almost like a movie for me. At the end, it said, you know, something like coming soon from Donnie Cates and Jeff Shaw, all on one page, right? And you flip it over, and there's this double spread of Guardians of the Galaxy. And it was just kind of awe-inspiring. You look at this spread. For one, Jeff Shaw's art, I think he's an underrated artist. If you look at God Country and then look at the work he's doing now, you can just see this guy getting better and better. But just to see a double spread of all these characters, from the old Guardians of the Galaxy to the new Guardians of the Galaxy, people have been in Guardians of the Galaxy books. It was pretty incredible to see. And so it's really exciting. I mean, it was kind of cool to read this like cool issue. And at the end, I'm not going to spoil this, but there's a cool twist with Thanos in this. And then you get to see that these two guys, Donnie Cates and Jeff Shaw, two of the hottest people in comics, are going to do Guardians of the Galaxy. And they're going to have all these characters included. It's just pretty awesome. So definitely keep your eye out for Guardians of the Galaxy. And that brings me back to the question, is Donnie Cates the hottest writer out there? If he's not, he's darn close. And I think that I'm not going to anoint him the hottest writer until I see Guardians of the Galaxy. He's been having a great run. Redneck, which was his Image book, came after God Country. Redneck's been really good for Image. And then he made his foray into Marvel Comics. He's doing Thanos. He's doing Death Eating Humans, which I find to be really good. And Ariel Olivetti is doing the art on that. It's been fabulous. Now he's doing his Venom run. And some of the, you know, techniques that he uses as a writer is, you know, to keep it fresh, keep a lot of the twist, kill off characters. And I think what's going to be really important is just to see what he does when that's over. You can't keep killing characters off. I get it. You know, I mean, they did, you know, for people who complained about him just killing off people, what do you think made The Walking Dead so popular? Right? I mean, what they did is killed off a lot of the B characters and then systematically killed off some A-rated characters to keep it more interesting. So if you're going to get on Donny Cates about just killing off people to get readership, then, you know, say the same about Kirkman, who his new book, Die, 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 has been pretty awesome. Anyway, we don't want to get into all that. So definitely check out Thanos Legacy. If you've been reading Infinity Wars or if you read Thanos Wins, that'd be a really cool book to throw into your arsenal here. Now we're going to jump into our first book that has not hit the stands. There's a good thing and bad thing about this book. Now, the good thing is because this book was either over my head or just totally out of reach for me, I decided to include another book, Dead Rabbit, that was really awesome. So House of Whispers is a Vertigo book. This is going to be released on Wednesday, 9/12, in case I can't get this podcast up before this Wednesday. So this may not be a preview, but a post-view. But anyway, this is part of Neil Gaiman's Sandman universe. So I read this book, House of Whispers. I didn't know anything about the creators. These were all foreign people to me. Nalo Hopkinson is the writer. Art by Dominique Stanton, or Domo, I guess, is they go nickname. And cover art by Sean Andrew Murray. So I read this book and just utterly confused. There was some tie-in between the quote-unquote real world and the quote-unquote, I guess it's sleep world, where there's voodoo and there's souls, and I didn't quite get it. And so what I did was, when I prepared for the podcast here, I usually go and I kind of do a rundown and print out some stuff so I know what the heck I'm talking about. And so what I did is I went to Diamond's retailer site and printed out a synopsis of what this issue is about. Boy, do I wish I would have read this first, because what it did is it made this book mean something to me. I mean, it was really creatively done. I don't know if having something of this little caption would have been good to have in the front of the book to read before you actually read the issue. And the PDF I got, maybe they will have some sort of introduction that will help readers. Hopefully so. But if not, I will give you a little background on this book so it will make some sense. What House of Whispers is you're introduced to Azrulli Freda. And what she is it appears that she is like the soul goddess, a voodoo soul goddess, where when people go to sleep, they go to her in their dreams, and she is a flirtatious and tragic goddess. And what she does is grant them their heart desires and counsels them on their futures and fortunes. So when you arrive to her world, what you'll find is like this hedonistic type party with half-naked people. Well, I'm sure it's Vertigo. You'll probably see some nudity, maybe not. But you get them to this hedonistic type place, party in full swing. There's tons of fabulous and fierce folk and tons of food. But what happens is that's where you go and you make your appeal to her to have her fulfill your wish and your dreams. Now, what's also going on at the same time in the book is you jump to the quote-unquote real world, where there are four individuals, two young kids being watched by an older sister and the sister's girlfriend. And something's going on there. And what's going on there is that these people have accidentally found a magic journal filled with whispers and rumors that if they spread could cause a pandemic unlike any the Earth has seen, with the power to release Sapona, the Loa Lord of infectious disease and cousin to Azrulli. So Azrulli has a cousin who you don't want to have released. How these young kids came across this book, I have no idea. So anyway, this cousin of hers, Sapona, was banned from the human plane, I guess, because he was so evil. But the idea is that this book that these young kids have in their hands can possibly bring him back. And so that's the whole book. Again, I had no idea what I was reading when I read it, you know, and I can't say that my endeavors into the Sandman world are in depth. I mean, I guess I would even call myself a cursory reader. I've read the Sandman books, of course. I didn't read Sandman Mystery Theater. Someday would like to. Did not read the Books of Magic. I did read the issue, the 3 or 4 issue limited series, only because Charles Vest did a lot of the covers and did some of the art. But I can't say I'm a devotee of the Sandman universe. So that could have been the reason that this wasn't super approachable to me. But having known this introduction and knowing what is going on definitely makes me like it a lot more and will even make me want to jump into the second issue. Speaking of jumping into a second issue, second book that I'm going to review is Cemetery Beach, that goes on sale also on this Wednesday. Now, this is an Image book by Warren Ellis, all-star writer of Planetary, Fell, many other, you know, forays into the Marvel universe. And also Jason Howard is providing the art duties on this. Now, he and Warren Ellis had worked on Trees together. I know what you're thinking. Why would I jump into a Warren Ellis book? That's an Image book where he's not going to be held to any specific timeline or time frame to release his book. Ugh. I cannot even begin to try to defend him, and nor does he need me to defend him. I'm just going to go on blind faith that this book is going to come out regularly. But when I read this book, I'm definitely going to wait for it, because Ellis has done it again. What he does when he writes a book, he just makes you want to read it. His writing is just far and above superior to a lot of writers out there. And, you know, I know the trouble he has finishing his book. Trees is like the worst. I kind of gave up on it. I don't even know if the book ended, if it's still hanging. I don't know. But immediately we're put, the story takes place in an interrogation room with a guy being interrogated, totally naked, of course, Michael Blackburn. He's a hostage that is willing to tell his interrogator everything. It kind of reminds me of the scene in Deadpool when Deadpool's bar buddy gets captured, and he's willing to give up all the information on Deadpool and their plans. It was pretty funny. But anyway, he's a hostage. He's willing to tell his interrogator everything. This is a great vehicle for Warren to set the stage within 2 pages. So there's not like this thick, dense story that you have to read for like half the book to figure out what's going on. Warren Ellis, using the vehicle of someone being interrogated, he's able to sum up in a couple panels immediately what the whole story is. And what you find out immediately is that they're on another planet, another planet that's called the quote-unquote Old World. I'm sorry. No, they are on another planet. The interrogator and Michael Blackburn are on another planet. And what they refer to is what is our world, which is the Old World. And so what's going on is the interrogator wants to know what is going on in the Old World colony. And this off-world colony, which is where they are, was established roughly in the 30s and has been receiving supplies intermittently ever since. And Michael Blackburn, from the Old World, was set to get intelligence, a part of a force reconnaissance. And what his job was is to find out you know, what this off colony is doing and how far they're established. And what is apparent is that the colony has no desire to be found, hence Michael Blackburn being captured and interrogated. Also, members that are in the colony obviously find out they find their way there, but they're not allowed to venture back to the Old World. So once you're on the colony, you're on the colony. And vice versa, if you're not in the colony, it's hard to go back and forth and to figure out how to get to this new colony. After divulging all this, Michael kills the interrogator, and only a scene that Jason Howard could draw. And if you look at this artwork, you know, it's pretty plain simple, but it's effective. His artwork is just solid, right? You know who the characters are, the facial expressions. The action scenes in this are just awesome. So when Michael Blackburn takes out the interrogator, there's just a really cool action scene that takes place. And because of this Image, you're going to see a lot of the violence. And you certainly see that with this. So Michael escapes from his interrogator. And what he does when he's leaving, he checks out the other holding cells and he finds a young lady, Grace Moody. A narrative that would be able to help Michael escape and get into contact with the old world. So immediately, again, good plot writing in that, you know, he's going to free another prisoner who is a local of there, and she will be able to show him around this new colony and help him get into contact with the old world. And we have trademark Warren Ellis here after all this, because you're going to get a lot of the panels with no dialogue. Some of the complaints about Warren Ellis are that when you read, you know, maybe his first James Bond book, you could read it in like 5 minutes because there were so many just panels without words and it was just a bunch of action scenes. And then he did this with Moon Knight too, but I thought his work on Moon Knight was really clever. Warren Ellis did a whole book where, again, there was hardly, not a lot of words, and the panels even reduced as you read the book. It's hard for me to explain how that went, but there's a Moon Knight book. If you come to the shop, I can tell you which one it is, and you can check it out and see for yourself. So you get some classic Warren Ellis here. You just get a middle book fraught with tons of just action, just downright action. And Jason Howard knows how to do this. It really is smooth transition from panel to panel, very minimal words, and you know exactly what's going on. And Jason Howard gives you some views of the cityscape of this colony. And so you kind of get the idea that there's some futuristic stuff here that I guess the technology can advance in some way. Like there's some flying cars, but yet there's some old stuff too. Like a lot of the police force of this colony, and they almost look like they're from Cuba, the way their costumes are drawn. So you get some old feel with some new feel. And you're really not sure exactly what kind of technology and how advanced this new colony is. But like I said, the panels just take you through the story in a really cool way. And what we find out too is after this huge escape scene where Moody Gray skillfully helps, Michael Blackburn escape flying vehicles, we also find out who's running this colony. We're introduced at the end of the book to President Barrow, a large, naked, bald man writing what appears to be a novel on a typewriter, and he's not exactly thrilled that there's someone from the old world there. The indicator is that he says that the old world is finally coming for us, and he won't allow it. So they have flying cars, but they still use typewriters. I wonder if Ellis will be making a bit of social commentary throughout the story. Why would I say this? Well, during the interrogation, Michael Blackburn is telling the interrogator that in the old world, everyone talks through computers. So I'm going to try to give you this dialogue by Warren Ellis. So the interrogator says, "So, what's the old place like right now?" Michael responds, "Well, let me tell you, those walkie-talkies you have, back home, everyone has them, but now they take photographs and television and play music, and they get the news and weather, and they're just these little slabs of nearly unbreakable glass, and everyone talks through computers now." Interrogator says, "You're shitting me." Michael retorts, "Nope, computers are the size of books, and the worst thing, guys can send pictures of their dicks to pretty much to anyone, anywhere." Now that's classic Warren Ellis dialogue, and of course there's some obvious social commentary thrown in here. So I'm really excited to continue this read. So for those of you Ellis fans who have followed him in Transmetropolitan, Planetary, The Authority, Trees, which I hear is currently being adapted to television, so I guess he must have finished it, Injection, Definitely check this book out. You're not going to be disappointed. And for those of you who don't read Warren Ellis, no worries. You can hop right into this. It's definitely going to be a fun ride. Now, to kind of switch gears a little bit, we're going to jump into Batman Damned number 1, which goes on sale September 19th. This is going to be a 3-issue bi-monthly prestige format miniseries, meaning it's going to be chock full of good stuff because there's only going to be 3 issues. It's going to be thicker than normal, so you're going to get like a double book, and it's going to be in a really cool format. What they told us as retailers, they're actually going to ship this in bundles of 50. And what they're going to do is they're going to binded these bundles of 50 in a plastic wrap. Somehow that's going to keep this prestige glossy format protected from any damage. We'll see what UPS has to say about that. But this is the first story title featuring DC's new black label. You know, I guess that White Knight is the actual first black label book because they are slapping the black label logo on that book when it's given away at Halloween Comic Fest. And don't forget, Halloween Comic Fest should be the Saturday after Halloween because I think Halloween falls on the Wednesday. But anyway, we're going to have copies of White Knight to give away, and that will have the DC black label on it. But for me, this is really the first DC black label book. And let me just start by saying I'm biased. Of course, everyone is, but I'm really biased when it comes to Lee Barrama's art. He is one of my top five artists. You know, it's funny. I think I say to a number of people when they bring up a book and there's an artist I really like Gary Frank, Chris Burnham, Tim Vigil. Well, no one brings up a Tim Vigil book anymore. But I always say, oh, the guy's in my top five artists. Jeff Darrow comes to mind. So I think I've said that for about 10 different artists. So I'm going to come up with my top 10 artists one of these days. But anyway, so I'm highly biased. Lee Barrama's art is phenomenal. And so the variant cover on this is going to be Jim Lee. I prefer the regular cover. The Lee Barrama cover is just phenomenal if you want to get them both. But this is going to carry, I believe, a $7.99 price tag. So I maybe stick with one cover. I get the Barrama if I were you. So what did Dead Man Constantine Zatanna and what appears to be one of the Endless have in common? They're all in this book. This book is what you would expect it to be, written by Brian Azzarello. It's not disappointing at all. I'm starting the second season of Ozark. I don't know if anybody's watching that with Jason Bateman, and it's exactly what I expect. It's great. It's like you're going, like if you go to a concert, one of your favorite bands, and for me, maybe the Moist Boys, and you know what you're going to get when you go there, and they kill it, they deliver it every time. That's what this book delivers. For me, Brian Azzarello does crime and filth very well, whether it be 100 Bullets, Joker, Spaceman, and there's a serious good pull there. I mean, check out this Image book. Who remembers Spaceman? Or Moonshine. That stuff appeals to me. Now, when Azzarello delves into Wonder Woman, you know, and some of that other stuff, he did a run on Superman. Yeah, and I didn't know he's married to Jill Thompson, who also was an artist on Sandman, Swamp Thing, and Wonder Woman. So it all ties together. But anyway, some of his work on some of those characters just doesn't do it for me. But this book, man, he really knocked it out of the park. So what is this book about? John Constantine narrates the story. And as you can guess from the character lineup, it's a supernatural story. This is just a whodunit. And I don't think this is any spoiler because it's been in almost every preview about this book. But the Joker is dead. You know, right away, you know, so now you're wondering, okay, who did it? And what's kind of cool about Lee Barrama's art is he just doesn't do like a full page splash of the Joker being dead. No, it's this little single panel, and I think it's something like an 8-page or an 8-panel, not the standard 8-panel thing, but there's roughly like 8 panels, I think, where he shows the Joker dead. And it's just one of the small little panels. So I don't know if that's part of a plot device where you can't really see how the Joker had died, but the Joker is apparently dead. So this book weaves back and forth from current time back to Bruce as a child, pre-death of Martha and Thomas Wayne. And what is going on in current time is the death of the Joker, and the big question is obviously who done it, and Batman is smack dab in the middle of this. Why is Constantine involved? Why Deadman? And most importantly, why doesn't Batman remember what happened the night that this famous villain, the Joker, died? To add some intrigue, Batman woke up in an alley, beaten and bloody from what appears to be a stab wound. A homeless individual witnessed the murder, and conveniently, he is not quite operating on the same level of sanity as the general population. So he gets discarded rather quickly. Add in another element of intrigue at the end of the book and you have yourself a bona fide mystery here. And no, I'm not going to tell you what that little twist is at the end. And what Azzarello does well is weave all of the mentioned elements, current time, supernatural characters, and the past to set the stage for what appears to be a good ride. See, the world has utterly failed him. Doesn't it stand to reason that his standard is so high that he can't help but fail himself? To be so relentlessly driven, the failure has met him violently. Well, it must be tiring. And that's how Azzarello describes Batman. And it's true. When you really start to look at this, it is a world that failed him. And that is why his standard is so high. And his standard, the Batman standard, is so high that he can never reach that standard he continually fails himself. And that failure is what drives him violently to keep doing what he must be doing. And that's what this book captures for me. It's just the tirelessly effort that Batman puts forward. And this is going to be that type of story where it's just going to drag you along with him as he's a tortured soul. And there's one scene in here that Brammo depicts of the Batman, Bruce Wayne, just breaking down in front of his cape and cowl. And let me just talk a minute about the design of the Batman outfit. Everybody's familiar with Heath Ledger's version of the Joker, Oscar-winning, award-winning performance. But the costume itself was phenomenal, right? And that's what was one of the things that really set him different from all the other Jokers or all the other people that played the Joker. But that costume was based off Lee Barrera's depiction of the Joker in he and Brian Azzarello's book, Joker. So if you ever want to kind of take a trip down memory lane and remember Heath Ledger, go read Joker, which is a original graphic novel. We do carry it at the shop, but you can see some awesome art and really see where Heath Ledger and the costume designer took the impetus for the Joker outfit in that movie. It's phenomenal. I think you'll really like this book. This book will sell itself. I reviewed it not to get people interested, but just to really give a nod to these two creators who just knocked it out of the park. I don't know much about Deadman, but it gives me a cool little insight. Doesn't bash me over the head with his powers, but I kind of understand Deadman a little more from this, and I do dig Zatanna, so Zatanna is in here. I really like that, but I think you'll really like this book. Now we're going to move on to the book that I decided to include because House of Whispers just didn't quite grabbed me the way I thought and was super confusing to me, but we're going to talk a little bit about Dead Rabbit number one. This is released on October 3rd. It's written by Jerry Dugan and art by John McCrea. No, not the guy from Cake and Ben Folds 5, but John McCrea from fame of Hitman, and he also did some work for The Boys, so you know he and Ennis run around and create awesome gritty stuff. But now he's teaming up with Jerry Dugan. And this book just does it for me. I didn't jump on to Jerry Dugan's work on Analog. I know a lot of my customers read that and love it tremendously. And I know it's been picked up and optioned, which, you know, as everybody says, what hasn't been picked up and optioned? But yeah, so I didn't know much about Jerry Dugan other than, you know, Infinity Wars. I am reading that. I didn't read his run on Deadpool, which I heard was really good. But this book was awesome. I was going to add this anyway to the next podcast, but I'm glad I didn't wait. So just to give you a little bit about what the story is, the protagonist is Dead Rabbit, a.k.a. Martin. He's a criminal from the 90s, and in the 90s, he terrorized the police, the public, and other criminals in Boston. He did the smart thing, which is he retired from the crime business after committing one big take, and that one big take was getting over $10 million from the local mob. This makes sense, right? Quit while you're in the 90s, because now we have smartphones, there's cameras on street corners, and a bunch of other technology that keeps crime at, you know, which to the cyber criminals, Just ask TK how easy it was to do a crime in the current timeline. But anyway, so he retires from the 90s, and this book, you know, what the 90s gave us was, it's pretty cool if you think about it. You look back at the 90s, and a lot of people say the 90s were just like a wasteland and just a horrible time. But what it did give us is grunge. You know, we got Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden. And what does this have to do with the book? Well, absolutely nothing other than I'm making the connection between that genre, which is the grunge movement coming into play, and the style of this book. It's really grungy, right? It's gritty and grungy. I mean, from John McCrea's artwork, where it's very, to me, appears to be heavy pencils, you know, a lot of the gray tones. Basically, when you see some panels, all you see is gray tones and red. And the costume that they did for Dead Rabbit's pretty cool. He's got like a hat on. You know, he's not a superhero. He's a criminal. And he's like, I guess, what you would almost consider a realistic criminal. It doesn't look like there's any superpowers in this book. So he's got a mask on, and there's two red lines drawn over his eyes. And this works really well in the book, I think. So there's some panels where, you know, there's a lot of negative space under Dead Rabbit's hat. And all you see are these two X's over his eyes. So it's pretty ominous looking. It's pretty cool looking, and obviously would make him menacing to criminals. So it's pretty cool, you know, so you get some 90s idea of how he was terrorizing people in the 90s. Now we move forward, and the book really takes place in the present day. So what we do is we see not a completely washed up Dead Rabbit, aka Martin, but we see an aging one with hemorrhoids. And there's a really funny scene in the beginning of the book where he addresses, you know, his current life not being all that awesome because he has to stand to wipe his ass due to those hemorrhoids. But here we are. It's, you know, in the book, it's the 20th anniversary since his retirement, or so the public thinks he's retired. But what's actually going on is Martin is hiding in plain sight. He works at a local big box store, which is obviously Walmart, and tries to make ends meet with some extra income by basically marking some of his, I guess, the clientele that walks through Walmart and ripping them off. And see, the issue is with Martin is even though that he made that big take of $10 million, and I'm wondering where the $10 million went, but what appears to have happened is he's now broke. And the issue is that he didn't tell his wife. So he is married. She knows that he was Dead Rabbit, but the assumption is that he gave that business up. He gave up the way of crime, is now working an honest job, and apparently he has not told her that they are poor. So he needs money because his wife is very ill. So not only are they poor, and this may be the reason that he blew through the money, is she has an illness that has left her in a wheelchair. So as being a meet and greeter for Walmart, you know, as the story moves on, he happens to see one day that there is a guy buying a bunch of supplies to get rid of a body. Now, I don't know what these supplies are. It's like ammonia and, you know, whatever supplies are to get rid of and dissolve a body. But Martin notices that he has all this stuff. And so there's some inner dialogue going on here. It's pretty funny. He's saying to himself, oh, what an amateur. You know, you would come in and buy these supplies at different times, not all at once. But so he's checking this guy out and seeing if maybe this is a guy he can go after to get some money. So what he does is he, through a transaction at the register, he finds out where this guy lives, and Martin, aka Dead Rabbit, has the costume back on, and of course the house where this guy lives is remote with some cornfields around. But so what happens is Martin's going to go bust in there and see what's going on, and what he does is he stumbles onto something bigger. Apparently, the guy that was buying chemicals and whatnot to dissolve a body is housing a bunch of illegal young girls and was keeping them in hard conditions in the basement of the house. So, of course, Martin kills the guy, and he kills the guy's partner and does the right thing and leads the police to the scene. So this is like whole Dexter-esque, right? He's a criminal with a heart, right? So Martin goes home, and he's confronted by his wife, Megan. And she totally blows his cover because he's bleeding from the arm and doesn't notice it from the tangle he had with these two men. And she says, I know you're working as the Dead Rabbit again. And so she confronts him, and as she does, maybe because of the stress, she passes out. And that's where our book stops. It was an awesome ride. I'm so glad I read it. Jerry Dugan really did a good job moving the story along, and the art complements the story very well. It's very gritty, and the story is very gritty. And it's just definitely gonna be a good ride, and I look forward to continue reading it. And there's a cool twist at the end. I'm surely not going to tell you what that twist is, but it really ties the book all together. And I think what Jerry Dugan did a good job is bring it full circle. So some of his life from the 90s, it resurfaces at the end of the book in a really neat way that certainly is going to make people want to continue to read this. All right, well, I want to thank everybody. Thank you for that coming back and enjoying, hopefully enjoying this podcast and maybe the different format. And the last thing I'm going to do today is just introduce what's going to be hopefully a new part of the podcast here. And this is just kind of do like a little expose on certain creators. And what I want to do is just introduce everybody to Matt Kynt and his work. Matt Kynt has been writing for a while now. My first introduction to him was Mind Management. It was a book he did, and normally I would grab something like Mind Management, and the art is not exactly my type of art, and to be honest, it's not a lot of people's types of art. Matt Kynt does write and draw. He doesn't draw exceptionally well. It's kind of like Jeff Lemire type art, like you put up with it because the story is so good. Matt Kynt's the same way. His writing is just phenomenal. If you haven't read Mind Management, and I think what they've done with that is they presented it from Dark Horse in these hardcover books. They're $20. And I think you get something like 6 issues in these hardcovers for $20. They would count towards our trade paperback book club card. So feel free to take advantage of that. But Mind Management was my first introduction to him, and I'm glad I got past the art style, which I don't particularly like, but it worked for the book, and it's really neat, because when Matt Kynt puts out some of his work for now Boom Studios and Dark Horse, he uses really pulpy paper. It's not the slick, smooth paper. It's not quite newspaper print either. It's something in between, but it works really well, and it has a nice feel when you're reading the book. And this is a reason, like, when you look at the PDF, I try to keep that in mind. Presentation on paper matters a lot, and for Matt Kynt stuff, having, you know, some of the duller tones because it's not on the glossy paper really works, and I think he pays attention to that when he creates a project. But anyway, so what I'm going to do hopefully in the next couple podcasts is at the end just delve a little more into Matt Kynt. His work on Grass Kings was phenomenal, and his current book out now is called Black Badge. And this is the reason I thought of him is because I read Black Badge, and it was just a great book. You know, there's some social commentary going on with this. Tyler Jenkins does the art on it. This is the guy who was the artist on Peter Panzerfaust. The art's solid. So now you have Matt Kynt, who's an awesome writer, and he's being accompanied by a great illustrator, Tyler Jenkins, and colors are done by Hillary Jenkins. I wonder what relation she might have to Tyler. Leathered by Jim Campbell. There you go, Coy. You'll be happy I announced the leather. But yeah, it's a solid book. Only issue 1 is out, so it's not too late. I went pretty big on this book. If you're a fan of some sort of intrigue slash mystery slash Boy Scout stuff, and yeah, Boy Scout stuff, I know it sounds kind of weird, but yeah, this is like a Boy Scout book. You know, you get a group of people together who are really into this version. It's like a version of the Boy Scouts, and the ultimate thing is to be, it's not just to get your black badge. You know how in the Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, like you get badges when you do like Weeblo or Pueblo. I don't even know. I actually was never in the Boy Scouts. You'll have to talk to Turtle about that. But anyway, so you get these badges when you achieve these certain things. Well, the ultimate thing is to achieve your black badge. And that's where this book picks up. And what happens is when you go to get your black badge, what we find out in the story is that you not just achieve the black badge, you become the black badge, because what you have to do is something super intense, and you become like almost this James Bond secret operative if you can obtain your black badge. So we'll delve more into Matt Kynt and feature him as an artist over the next podcast or two. Just so those of you who don't know about him, he may be flying under people's radars. You should definitely pick up some of his stuff and check it out. Okay, we're going to wrap it up here. I just want to give a quick mention about our shop. We are currently going to try to get the shop a little more organized for everybody. Not that it's completely disheveled and all out of sorts, but I am sitting on a crap ton of back issues. So if you're listening to this and there's some stuff you're looking for, I bought a couple collections, and due to time, I am struggling to get some of that stuff out there. So just to keep it in everybody's mind, we do have some back stock. I bought a Run the Daredevil issue 7 up to 250, and I have a lot of books. You know, it's not going to be, if you're looking for silver and gold age stuff and secret finds, that's not going to be it. But I do actually have some silver age, but yeah, if you're looking to fill some holes, by all means ask. We're really going to try to get organized and get that stuff out there. For those of you listening to the podcast, and if you're DC fans, I did not intentionally leave DC out of this. I will be featuring an all DC podcast. For those of you coming to the shop, you may know that I'm not the biggest DC fan. It doesn't mean I don't like DC. Wait a second. I cover Batman. Huh. Isn't it weird that I don't even consider Batman part of the DC universe? Anyway, but I am going to do like a DC non-Batman podcast. I've been digging into Justice League Dark. Totally not really up my line of reading. And also I've been reading Superman by Brian Michael Bendis. Just wanted to formulate my own opinion. You know, I hear a lot of people's opinions about, you know, who and what Brian Bendis does to comic books. I just really wanted to formulate my own opinion, especially on a character like Superman. So please hang in there. If it's other than Batman DC you're looking for, I will be doing some of that. So I just want to thank everybody again for tuning in to Comic Book Awesomeness. And I look forward to doing more podcasts and having guests. And we will, I promise, we will be getting Koi back. And Tom promises me, Mr. Tom Whalen, that is, promises that he will be doing a podcast with us sometime in the future. But like everybody, he's super busy. But we will have people on here, so you just don't have to listen to me drone on. And thanks again. That's it. I'm out.